Luba, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
And Howard, Howard.
Luba, give us your thoughts. South Africa celebrating Women's Day, and of course, we look at August as Women's Month. How far have we come in our respect for women and our approach on the subject?
I think we've come quite far, Howard, but what interested me, I think, was the fact that the International Women's Day celebration takes place on March the 8th, and it has pretty much the same theme. You know, if you look at this year's theme, it's aimed around gender equality, greater awareness of discrimination, and the celebration of women's achievements. Ours takes a slightly more political flavor. You know, it's 25 years of democracy, and we're remembering the march in August 9th, 1956, of 20,000 women to the Union buildings. So I think that's where maybe we want to anchor ours, but if you go around the country, I think most people aren't necessarily remembering that day, that march to Union's building. They're remembering more, they're focusing more on celebrating women's achievements and ending discrimination. Where are we on that front? Oh, I think we've made tremendous progress, but it's a difficult issue to manage, in some ways similar to getting the quotas right in sports and things like that, because I mean, I was listening to you guys in Gauteng where the premier was being told by the ANC Women's League that his cabinet wasn't suitably reflective of the gender balance, and therefore he needs to fire one male MEC and bring in somebody else. Now, that's an interesting one, you know, because you're really then trying to create that situation regardless of whatever is there. But I think in South Africa, you've got to balance and say, I think we've made strides in that regard. But in terms of, let's say, the violence against women, that I think has increased exponentially, you know, in the last 25 years. But certainly if you look in the workplace, I think there are far more opportunities for women. I don't want to be complaining, but what I would say is that the focus, I think, has been quite tremendous. If I look at, let's say, the black economic empowerment space, it is much easier for Lindy or Zenati to get into a BE deal than I would as a black male. Because when you look at the scoring, you know, if you have women on the team, it somehow counts more. Mm-hmm. So you'll find that for the average black male, if you get into a BE deal, people say, well, what do you bring? Do you bring any resources with you? Whereas with women, it's a little bit easier to get in. But having said that, I still think there's a lot more that women can do, and that space is certainly big enough for both of us.
That's actually such an interesting point. Sorry, Luba, before you carry on, I just want to just put a pin in that, or a peg in that point, and I want to come back to it maybe next week and have a proper conversation on it. But it is so interesting because I often have conversations with white guys, and they say, oh, yeah, you know, it's so difficult being a white male now. You can't get jobs anywhere. You can't get work, or you can't. And it always irritates me because I always say just, well, then try harder and offer something different.
Yeah.
Or use the resources that you have, become an entrepreneur, whatever it is. I never buy into that. But what's interesting is that we seem to have a scale because if white guys are feeling that, then maybe white women are next, and then maybe black guys are next, and then black women are next. You know, it's actually very interesting that we've created, you know, maybe I'm being too harsh when I talk to people. Maybe it is very, very difficult based on where you stand on what we have now determined in South Africa is a hierarchy of value.
There's certainly a hierarchy. You know, for instance, at the bottom of the food chain, you'd have a white male. Mm. And then sometimes a white female might be ahead of sometimes even a black male sometimes.
Right, because
if you're looking at just
gender,
plain
right.
gender parity, you would say, I need women in the team regardless of what color they are. And then, you know, you have the black male. And, you know, for instance, I remember around about the early 2000s, still now, you'll get women in construction, women in mining, women in fishing, women in this, and all of these groups, even to the extent that, I mean, on my birthday, I attended a book launch, and I said to the woman, all you speak is a woman. You want to solve the issue of discrimination or violence against women. But I said, you're all getting together. And I said, where are the guys? I said, nowhere in your speakers have you got one single male. And I said, the problems you want to solve involve us because we're the other half of the equation. So whether it's in a workplace, it's in a marriage or relationship or it's violence, men are there. And I said, you're almost becoming a very elitist club whereas you need to reach out to us. You need to solve this problem together, but you can't sit and workshop the issues and say you've found solutions and then come to us and say, well, implement. So I do have that concern that somehow men are being marginalized in trying to solve a lot of these issues, and we need to work together because, you know, workplace marriage, we're there. And I think we're a vital component. We may not necessarily have the best solutions, but I think we need to be part of the journey, part of the conversation. A comment I will make, though, Howard, is that there's something truly unique about women, but I think in the scramble for, you know, achievements and gender parity, they sometimes lose that. You know, I'll give you one example without getting into names. When I came to Cape Town and I managed a region, I had a team that had maybe one woman, and then it was all male, the managers. And then, you know, the managerial team I managed grew bigger. But then what fascinated me was I knew what men brought to the leadership team. Men were incredibly driven, incredibly determined, but they were, you know, they could be dragons. They could really sacrifice people. They were cutthroat. And what women would bring often to the team that I thought would a better balance, they could lead people, but they would be able to take people along and have the empathy to build people and nurture young talent to grow. But what I started to see was that the women became worse than the men. To prove that they were capable, they were absolute monsters. And I kept saying to them, ladies, no, you don't have to be more aggressive than the guys to prove that you're one of the team. I need you to retain that essential characteristic of being a woman and bring that with you, because you bring a better balance. And it was difficult to see, because I think there's a lot of them had bought into this hype that, you know, to be at the top of leadership in, you know, in executive senior management, you had to display certain characteristics. And I think for me, that's a tragedy, that we need to allow women to lead in the way that they instinctively lead. Yes, we can, you know, you can assist anybody to fine tune their leadership skills, but there's a certain quality that women bring to the team that men cannot bring.
It's interesting because, I mean, that's really such an inherent conflict of even celebrating Women's Day, because we're living in this world of complete gender fluidity and choosing gender, not necessarily being bound by genders assigned to you, and yet now we're taking a day and a conversation around women. Now, it's interesting that your observation is interesting, because I've mentored many, many women in the workplace, and one of the observations made is that sometimes the worst misogyny or sexism comes from women themselves. Zanati's nodding her head vigorously.
I have felt this, where literally in an organization, you are literally terrorized by women because they are trying to prove a point that they can be just as harsh as the men.
But which is so sad, because they don't need to be, Howard. As Luba's saying. Yes. Actually, people are different.
Instead
and you don't
need
to.
Instead of leading with compassion, which is what women are, they're compassionate. But
So it's interesting. So one particular woman that who's in a very senior position at a public company who I mentor, she has fought very hard to retain, to not become that. Mm. And it's incredible. But what we had to do with her is create other cues to give her that authority. So in other words, what we would do is make sure that when she came into a board meeting as the chairman of that particular division, she had a specific seat and her things were there. Like we created almost messages around her, respect for her, rather than force her into a role that she actually didn't want to be.
Yeah.
But in itself, that's sad, because now she's almost having to create that, because I often look at it. I mean, I get invited to places to come and speak and lecture on Israel or whatever. And I always say to people, don't give me a specific seat. Don't give me a specified parking. And we men are trying to move away from that. And then women are now almost having to claim that to assert that authority. So I think in a way, it's a reflection. But remember, Howard, I mean, a lot of these challenges go into society. I've mentioned to you before that I still get perplexed till this day that in the African culture, there's a very strong hierarchy in the sense of even the simple thing of dishing out food. I don't know if Zanati has experienced it. I mean, I've said to you that, you know, My dad passed away a long time ago, but when we eat at home, my mother would wait for me to dish out food, and I struggled to understand it. I'd say, "Mom, you can dish out," and she says, "No, you need to dish out first." And it's madness because it's built around male hierarchy. If you're eating chicken, you know, the guy gets to choose the piece he wants first, and everybody else afterwards. So that's the challenge: is that we're trying to change these things in the workplace, in society. But back at home, within the cultural context, those stereotypes are alive and kicking, and that hierarchy is there. And it creates interesting conflict, because the same woman who you might empower in the boardroom has to go home and almost understand her place within culture. So she could be the CEO, but when she gets home, the husband couldn't care that she's a CEO. You know, there's this cultural hierarchy that she needs to adhere to. And I think that's the challenge, because it's very difficult to change the cultural hierarchy, because almost unmovable.
Yeah, time is 7:46. I'm chatting to Luba Mayakiso. We're talking about Women's Day here in South Africa, and of course, relevant issues for everybody around the world. We normally chat to Rolene Marks at this time. We've actually asked Rolene to, because we were having some issues with our Skype a little bit earlier, we've asked Rolene to speak to us just after the 8 o'clock news. So we will be chatting to her then, and we'll get the Israel report at that time. In the meantime, we are chatting to Luba. Give us your thoughts on 34519 or 061-895-1019. Luba, how important is it to change that culture? Surely that culture is part of a system and a fabric of a society that has evolved over hundreds of years.
Howard, you know, I didn't grow up steeped in it, so for me, it should be changed. But there's resistance. I've tried, and I've found that the people who practice it aren't even interested in discussing it, because it's one thing if the woman was saying, "I think this is unfair." So when I look at my mother is not open for discussion. So when I chat with my wife, it's almost like, you know what, let's not argue about this. This is what needs to happen. So the people that I think it discriminates against are the ones who aren't even interested in having the discussion. So that, for me, has been the challenge, is that, I mean, I haven't tried raising it outside of home. But when I see other black families come to us for dinner, for lunch, for braais, that's what happens. You know, the guys simply act in that accord, and none of the women complain. So I think it should change, but it's not. I think a generation that might challenge it is a younger generation. You know, our 14-year-old, she defends everything from, you know, from whales to turtles with the straws, and she's an ardent feminist. But at the same time,
it's lovely.
We need to get balance. You know, I took her out she asked me to take her out for tea on my birthday.
Right.
And as we walked out the restaurant, another couple was coming in, and I said to her, "Let's wait." So the lady came in first because she was older than my daughter. Then my daughter went out first, and we men then went out afterwards. And as we exited, she said to me, "You know, I really hate that. Why do guys think that they have to hold doors open?" And I said, "Okay, you've heard my views, and you disregard what I have to say as your father." So I said, "Okay, we're walking back to the restaurant. I'm going to find the couple." And the poor child cringed and said, "No, no, Dad." I said, "No, let's go and find them and see why."
Oh, no.
No.
No. It was a cliffhanger. Oh, wait. Luba, we lost you. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, it was like a cliffhanger, and then suddenly you disappeared. All right.
So I said to my daughter, "Let's go back and find them." She said, "Dad, no." No, I said, "Listen, I've always told you why I do this thing. You don't quite get it." So I said, "Let's hear from somebody else." I said, "It's a breath of fresh air. What could go wrong?" So I went up to them and said, "Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt you. Can we ask, why did you hold the door open for your partner and let it go through first?" And he said, "Look, I think it's the right thing to do as a gentleman, to show her that I appreciate her, that I love her." And she said, "Well, I like it. He doesn't always hold the door open for me, but," she said, "I appreciate it." And my daughter said, "Well, what about the bill?" And I said, "What about the bill?" She says, "Why do you guys feel you have to pay the bill for us?" And she said, "I enjoy it when you pay the bill." So I said to my daughter, "You're 14. You're not paying bills." I said, "But
exactly,
trust me, when
exactly.
it comes to you paying bills, you will appreciate him paying the bill. Right now, you think you need to pay the bill." But I can see we had this discussion. She walked away. She said to them, "I appreciate your views. I still disagree with you."
Okay. That's mature.
And she walked away. So for her, this issue is sexist, is discriminatory. And I think that generation will be able to tackle these things because this is a gender fluidity generation. You know, this is a generation that questions, they know holy cows are sacred cows for them. And I think our generation is conforming. So I think certainly in that generation, they will be revisited because they're not growing up in a cultural, in a deeply cultural setting, you know, they're growing up in suburbs and they're seeing both, you know, worlds, kind of their cultural context that they were born into and what's happening out there. And even the ones that come from the more rural areas are more, you know what, it's time that these things changed.
What's interesting is I don't understand why we aren't smart enough to marry these two things together. Having respect for women and treating people with respect and celebrating femininity, which is a trait of being a woman, is very, very different to discriminating against women. And I don't understand, you know, we intelligent people, why can't we get that across? And Anati, what's your thoughts on it?
No, I also agree. And I think also it's because of the fact that some feminists have taken that away from us. They literally want us to be, we need to understand that we are still different as men and women and we must embrace that. And that's what people don't
get. That's what I don't, they I want really us don't to understand all be the it. Same. And we're not.
We're not.
You know, the same as the physical body is manufactured, it's created differently.
Yeah.
So is the brain. So is every aspect of us. And anyone that's had children, Lib, I'm sure you could endorse this. From the day a child is born, boys and girls are different. They behave differently. And I don't think it's all socializing. I don't believe it's because we treat them differently. I just think it's just different.
You know, I think for me, when I look at this issue, I look at my mother and I always say men and women will always be different. But I'm in awe of the role that women play.
Of course.
To me, when I look at growing up without a mother and a father, I know it's hard to make the choice, but in some ways, growing up with my mother only, I think was far more beneficial because there's something about women that makes them incredibly loyal. You can go to a trial of a mass murderer or whatever. Guess who'll be there? It'll be somebody's mother who's saying, I'm here to stand up with my son. And I think what the loyalty that women have to their children is incredible, and the way they nurture them in a way that men can never hope or dream to have. I mean, your mother's there for you, period. You've narrated your story before about how she went and clapped and confronted somebody who was unkind to you. And I think for me, that's something.
No, I genuinely believe that women are much stronger than men. As part of that femininity is also an innate power and clarity that often men don't have. I mean, it's a terrible message I keep telling my family and my boys, is that you just have to understand that men are stupid. As a rule, I really believe that our physicality is very, very powerful on a physical level, but it often makes us stupid. Whereas I think that women generally have an innate strength, power, and clarity. I can tell you that looking at my family history, my wife's family, her family history, if I look at the characters and the people, I believe that the women hold the power and the strength behind absolutely every segment of family and of if their husbands were successful. I believe it's because of the power of women. If they're, you know, I believe it very, very strongly. And I think we have to be careful not to rob women of that in our desperate need to appear to seek equality.
Howard, I would agree with you completely and say women are emotionally incredibly strong, far more stronger and competent than men. We are physically stronger in many cases. But I think the problem with men that we cope with, apart from, which is tied to the emotional issue, is our ego. Is our ego often gets in the way of us doing the right thing and of us behaving correctly. And women generally don't suffer from an ego. And so, there lies the real challenge, that how do you get men to kind of put that ego aside? But certainly I can say, even when I look at children, if I look at my kids and I look at, let's say, what my daughter is doing and what my son is doing and what my son is doing at my daughter's age, certainly, I see far more development with the girls and maturity. But it's difficult for us, I think, to concede that, because society's always told us that we're stronger, we're better, we're the leaders at home, we're the leaders in business. And I think there lies the challenge. We need to be able to look at it and say our ego is getting in the way of things that we should be seeing and things that we should be doing. So in the workplace, you know, we will always prefer men. I've always joked and said, whenever I've flown on airliners, I've always had a much more smoother landing with a woman pilot. And I somehow feel that there's greater pressure on women to prove that I can be as good as a guy. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes feel sorry for them, because it's almost, I understand it from a black point of view, that sometimes when nobody expects you to do something, you've got to go out of your way to prove that you can. And you've got to do so much extra just to prove your basic level of competence, which you shouldn't need to, because I mean, flying a plane is not about wrestling a plane. It's a delicate touch of landing the plane and making subtle changes. But I think we will get there. But again, I want to go back to my earlier plea and say, can we, Zanati, walk this journey together as men and women? You know, if we want to celebrate women's math, if we want to deal with the issues of discrimination, of violence, men are an integral part of that. That conversation mustn't take place outside without us. We need to be part of that conversation so that we can see where we need to change and we can give our input and explain in some ways why we do the stupid things that we do.
Absolutely. Luba Maiki, so I do need to leave it. I hope you have a fantastic day. Enjoy the public holiday, and we'll catch up with you next week.